Hey. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, the 4/24/12. I would ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay.
Wayne, before we get going,
I think it's important that we point out that we're still having what appears to me to be a computer glitch on our website, what documentation is available to the public. And it seems to me, at least on the agenda I've got, that we're cutting off the last couple items, which include public comment number two, announcements from the supervisors, and finally adjournment. Shelley, I don't know, was there one road closure that was cut off as well?
Yes.
So we just need to make sure that we point that out so that there's not any confusion in case somebody printed this at home.
Okay. All right. Very good. Yeah, on the copy that I have, it's there. So any of the handouts that are available, usually a few of these are made available. Is that correct, Shelley? Okay. All right. But thank you for pointing that out. It's very important to acknowledge that. Okay. Then as we move on down to item three, it's consideration of minutes of 4/10/12 and 4/10/12 canvas, school board canvas.
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of the minutes from 4/10/12 as well as the canvas. Any clarifications or corrections noted? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Minutes are approved for both. And then item four is public comments. This is the time where members of the audience may address the board on a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone that would like to address the board regarding topic on today's agenda? Hey, welcome, Nancy. Okay. We were just to your portion, Nancy. Anything? Okay. All righty. Thank you. All right. Then moving on then to item number five. This is the public hearing. This is the second consideration, the second reading of Ordinance 214, amending the floodplain management program for the unincorporated areas of Story County. Planning and Development Director Leanne Harder.
Since first consideration, staff has received no public input. Again, just briefly, this is amending our floodplain ordinance to reflect the department name change from Planning and Zoning to Planning and Department, Planning and Development, and that's the sole nature of the change.
Okay.
Glad to answer any questions.
Question for the board as well as for you. The normal procedure calls for three readings, but since this is just a name change, we've not had any comments regarding that. I'm wondering if the board, would it be their pleasure that we would suspend the third reading and approve this on second. Do you see that as being problematic?
Staff's perspective, we don't.
Okay. All right. Okay, with that, I will open the public hearing and then ask if there's anyone that would like to speak to this issue. Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board.
I'd move approval of Ordinance 214 and waive third reading.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second the approval of Ordinance 214 on second reading and waive the third reading. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Ordinance 214 is adopted. Thank you. Okay. Moving on down to item number two. This is Ordinance 214, which is a resolution number 1287. It's an amendment to the General Obligation Road Improvement Loan Agreement. This is again something that had been brought to our attention. I think the county engineer, and is this the one that has to do with the additional extension of Dayton Avenue, Darren? Okay, I will just have you give us a brief comment regarding this, and then we'll go ahead.
Yeah, what this is just a hearing to add the project to the bonding list of projects. It doesn't add money. It just adds a new project. So you just need to open the hearing, have the hearing, and then there's a resolution attached to approve to add McFarland Park Road, is what we call it, to the list of bonding projects.
Are there any additional questions for Darren at this time? Okay, hearing none, I will open a public hearing and ask if there's anyone that would like to speak to this ordinance change. Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing and turn to board. Your pleasure.
Hey, Darren, before you get too far away, just help me. This is originally budgeted. We were just going to do Dayton up to 190th, and we have, for the same dollars, we've been able to do 190th over to the interstate, and now we're going to do 180th McFarland Park Road.
Correct.
Just because we're getting things done cheaper than we originally budgeted, is that?
And the way we did the projects was a little different. We didn't totally reconstruct the road. We did more of an overlay and mill out, and so that left a little extra money there. And this is our last bonding project, so it's hard to exactly fit the money to the project, so we anticipate a little leftover anyway. So.
I think it's great anytime we can do more more without spending more. So.
Okay, with that, then I will open the public hearing portion and ask, are there anyone that would like to comment regarding this proposed change? I may have already done that, but okay.
Double
all right.
Chance.
Get double chance. clarification, Shelley, as I look at the agenda and the verbiage that is basically listed here, I don't think it's necessary that I need to actually just read that. I think you've got it all pretty much laid out in the normal format. Is that correct? Okay, that's what I need to know. Okay, with that, board, we have the resolution before us to be able to add this additional project with no additional dollars needed, but to spend the remaining portion of the dollars that had been approved. So with that, I would entertain a motion.
Move approval of Resolution 1287.
Second.
It's been moved and second. The approval of Resolution 1287. Any further comments? Hearing none, Mr. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1287 is adopted. And thank you, Darren. Okay. Okay, now we move down to additional items. The first of these is the consideration of Story County Flexible Benefit Plan following the seven-day review. Our Human Resource Director, Alyssa Wignall, welcome.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. This is back in front of you. We actually put it out here 2 weeks ago, so they had a little bit more than 7 days since there was no meeting last week. Had probably seven or eight emails. I talked to the union representatives. Haven't heard anything back from three of the unions. The other one I have been in correspondence. The union contracts say the terms of the benefit package are up to the Board of Supervisors, and I feel like this policy falls under the terms of the benefit package. So ultimately, it is your decision whether you approve this policy or not. A lot of positive comments about it. Some employees already thought we required them to show insurance or prove insurance. Because my understanding, when they first implemented this flex benefit, 1989, 1990, they did have to show an insurance card. So I wasn't around. I never have, but that's my understanding. We did drop the last paragraph from the draft that covered the subsidized. So all employees will have to do is bring an insurance card with them, any type of insurance, as long as they have coverage, regardless of who it's through, what company. They can take the flexible benefit in cash.
That's basically I've had a couple of people contact me with questions and concerns, and I think that most of the confusion came from this last paragraph.
Yep.
Yep, that is correct.
And I think once I explained it to them and what our intention was, then that kind of cleared it up, and I told them, it says, all you need to do during your open enrollment is bring if you've got insurance somewhere else, just bring your insurance card. That's all we need. So.
Well, to me, the intention all the way through this has been, if as an employee you're receiving public dollars that are to be for your health insurance, that you have some kind of health insurance. And so I appreciate removing that last paragraph. It does eliminate some of the confusion, and I feel pretty positively about moving ahead with this.
Hey, I think you've said it all, and I don't have anything to add to that. So with that, I would entertain a motion.
Yeah, I'll move. I will move adoption of the Story County Flexible Benefit Policy Plan.
I'll second it.
Been moved and seconded the adoption of the Story County Flexible Benefit Plan as presented. Any further comments, discussion? As amended.
Sure. As amended.
As amended, yes. Thank you, Shelley. Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Alyssa.
Thanks.
For your work in this area. Okay, moving on to item two, the acknowledgement of the purchase of a computer system in car between Sheriff's Office and Bright, or I suppose that at $5,191.75. This was a non-budgeted item. Is there anyone here from the Sheriff's Office to comment regarding this? Okay.
Wayne, help me with procedure here. This is a non-budgeted item, but it's not that the sheriff is requesting an additional $5,000. He's finding this in the budgeted dollars that he currently has. My question is simply our purview in this. I appreciate acknowledging it, and it doesn't say we're approving it,
right.
But it seems to me that as an elected official, once we budget and then finally allocate, and maybe that's where the confusion is since we haven't allocated everything, I think, until we have that conversation in a week or so. But it seems to me that as an elected official, he's empowered to spend the dollars that are allocated to him in the way he sees fit for the good of the sheriff's office. So I'm just... I remain confused about the procedure that's coming up.
It's more about our policy. We had established a policy some time ago. Anything greater than $5,000 would be brought to the board, and it was mostly for public documentation and notification. I agree with you 100% as far as the appropriation process and so forth, but I think this is just consistent with the way that we've operated. So yeah. I will yield to you, Lisa, on that regard.
Yeah, this was put on the agenda by myself. I had called the sheriff's office, asked the question whether it was budgeted or not, and
right.
It wasn't. And I said I'll have to put it on the agenda as an additional item for acknowledgement because, as you just said, the financial policy we passed in 2010 states that any item purchased over $5,000 that is not budgeted by an elected official or department head needs to be acknowledged separately on the Board of Supervisors' agenda. So that's why it's on there.
Great.
But just so I'm clear, he is well within the power vested in him by being the elected sheriff to spend these dollars as he sees fit. This
right.
is just part of our policy and procedure to get to this.
Right.
Correct.
Because here's where I don't want to go. I don't want to go down the road of saying, oh, yeah, I think this computer system in the sheriff's car is a great idea. I don't know if it's a great idea or not. He's the sheriff. And so that's what I'm concerned of by the acknowledgement here. I'm not taking a stand either way on that. I'm going to look at the dollars that he's spending, and if I don't feel that's appropriate, then I'm going to try to bring it to you guys and convince you that it's not appropriate.
That's why it's acknowledgement.
That's why it's acknowledgement instead of the approval process, because it is within his scope, and it's not requiring additional dollars. No, you have a very good point, and I think it's important that if there's any confusion that we have the clarification as we move forward. Okay, what is your pleasure, board?
Yes,
we just need a motion to acknowledge it. That's all.
I move that we acknowledge the expenditure from the sheriff's office.
Clearly. Second.
It's been moved and second that we acknowledge the expenditure from the sheriff's office as indicated for the in-car computer system. Hearing no further comments, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The acknowledgement is so duly noted. Okay, and thank you, Lisa, for calling this to our attention as well. Okay, then moving on to item three, it's a bid opening. This is for HMA resurfacing of Richland Street from two S-27 East to Union Pacific Railroad in Richland Township. I won't read through the rest of this area, but County Engineer Darren Moon.
Yeah, I gave you the bid tab sheets. They should be on
Yes, right
there.
Here. Okay.
We have two separate projects. Did you say the Richland Street was first?
Yes, Richland was first, listed first. Uh-huh.
Okay, so it'll be the bid tab sheet there that says Richland Street resurfacing. And we received one bid.
Gotta love competition.
Pretty easy.
From Manette's Incorporated out of Brooklyn, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. So under the Manette's column, bid amount total at the bottom is $81,412.69. 81412.69.
We're off a little bit.
Not too bad.
Okay. Normal procedure as far as the documentation and things of this nature, even though we have just one bidder, do you see any issues with that that would require that we delay any action on this, or would you like for us to go through the second one and then handle them both with one motion?
Probably do them separately since they're not tied. I would like approval at this board. I mean, we're kind of on a short time frame to get this done in the fiscal year, so I can check the numbers by the end of the board meeting and have these to you to sign for approval. So I guess at this time I'd recommend awarding Manette's as the apparent low bidder.
And the idea of the action would be taken here is that at the end of the meeting, if you come back and there was a reason or question, so it would be continued upon a review of the documents and so forth, we would be taking action to approve it.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. It's been.
Want him to open up the second bid?
We're going
to
do it separately.
We're going to do them separately. Yep. Okay. So it's been proposed that we offer the contract to Manette's Incorporated at the $81,412.69 pending the final review of the documents and figures as outlined. Hearing no further comments, Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Okay, Dan, we'll wait to hear back from you. Okay, moving on then to the second item. We'll give Shelley a chance to catch a breath. The second one is a resurfacing 180th Street to McFarland, and we also have bid openings there as well. Okay.
Okay, again, one bid from Manette's from Brooklyn, Iowa, and the bid bond is attached. So the total amount for Manette's is $104,054.46. 104,054.46.
Okay. Any other comments to Darren at this time? I would assume, would you like to see similar action on this proposal, and you'll be able to look at those figures and come back later in the meeting?
Correct. Same thing. I'd recommend approval of Manette's as apparent low bidder.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd move approval of awarding the bid to Manette's for McFarland Park road resurfacing, contingent upon the engineer going through the numbers and coming back at the end of the meeting and telling us it's good to go.
Second.
And moved in second, the approval of the awarding of the contract to Manette, subject to final recommendation of the engineer after checking the prices for later in the meeting. Hearing no further comments or discussion, all in favor? Well, notice This is all in favor of the motion. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Aaron, before you get away, are we working out a way to make sure we start getting these bids listed somehow in some way on our website? I'll tell you where I am. I'm all gung-ho on us getting a better grade than we've been getting from this Sunshine Review. You know, we put money into this website, and part of the deal is that you list bids and everything like this out on the website. Now, I understand there's a little concern there, but I wanted to encourage you to work through those and figure out a way to get these things posted there.
We can definitely do that. We have kind of two separate kinds of projects. We do projects that only allow DOT-certified bidders. Those are ones we kind of handle a different way, but we do other projects that we can get definitely on the website. But
I would suggest if there's a way, even on the projects that's only DOT-certified, just to notice that, hey, we're bidding this out, but it's only open to DOT-certified bidders, and you'd go find it. Not encouraging people to bid through the website, but okay. Just notification to the public that this is what we're doing. Okay.
Using it just another medium of notification that we have a project that we're contemplating accepting bids on. I see it as more is what he's trying to get. Okay.
All right. Do that.
Good. Thank you. All righty. Okay. Then moving on to item number four, which is consideration of Resolution 1283, the transfer control of Drainage District, Washington, number 59, to the City of Ames under the Code of Iowa, Section 468.322. Drainage Clerk Scott Wall, and I also think we probably may have a representative from Ames that may wish to comment regarding this as well. So, Scott, take it away.
Iowa Code allows the County Board of Supervisors acting as Drainage District Trustees to transfer administrative control of any drainage districts within the county that have 25% or more of their area inside a city. And 25% more of their area, and the city is using that for storm sewer or drainage purposes. We have several drainage districts that qualify. Today we're considering three of those districts in three of our cities, the first one being Ames. The district is Washington 59. 67% of the area of that district is within the city of Ames, and all of the district tiles within the city limits of Ames. Again, this would be administrative control of the district. The county auditor maintains district drainage district funds for all our districts. We do the billing. If a district needs to be levied, we will retain those functions. The city would just do the administrative work. If they want to levy the district, they just notify us how much levy, and we'd take care of that end of the paperwork. But they make the decisions on what happens.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Any questions for Scott at this time? Okay. Tracy, did you want to comment regarding you or the representative? I recognize the face, but I just don't recognize the name. There you go. Good. Great.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'm Judy Parks. I'm an assistant city attorney in Ames. Mr. Wall has indicated one of the criteria that you must find in order to transfer, but the city would also point out that a finding also has to be made that the district's drain or drains are needed or being used by the city, and it is the city's position that that is not the case. We have been presented nothing to show that this tile installed in 1913 is even functional. The nature of these is to silt in, and there has been no showing that the city needs it or, frankly, that it's even in usable condition and is being used. Those findings must be made before it can be transferred.
Okay. Thank you for your bringing that to our attention. I'll kind of give you a little quick synopsis of where I come from. I believe the code is pretty clear in terms of what we as a board can do based on where it's located and the percentage there. And I believe if there is any question of proof, then that falls on the City of Ames to provide that. And it's not at the county's expense, in my opinion, to determine that it doesn't meet the criteria that you lay out. That's just where I'm coming from. Okay, Tracy, anything to add?
Our city attorney's office is probably in the agreement that the Story County needs to prove. Over 100-year-old tile.
Good.
And, I mean, we have situations where we have 100-year-old tiles in town and they're not functioning.
Okay.
And so I see no proof that it's been indicated that you guys even know where the tile is, that you know whether it's functioning. There's no way to access it. As you guys heard in the last hearing, there were other communities that had the same situation, and you're not considering transfer of those because you don't know where they are, and it was going to be too expensive, you felt, to locate them.
That's not accurate.
That's not accurate. Okay. And I would ask Supervisor Sanders, I know you took the lead for the board, and I do appreciate that. I know you had a conversation with City Manager Steve Schenker regarding our intent and so forth. And I really think from the city's perspective, from my point of view, the only thing is we're talking about administrative control of the decisions that are being made there, which to me, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you from where I'm coming from as an individual. I see this is what happens when annexation occurs. When the city expands from its original territory and take over control of other areas, there are certain things that come under the authority and administration where the county has really no say. The code in this occurrence kind of points out that if the percentage of the land exists within that, then we, you know, do have the right to turn over administrative control. And so that's all we're basically doing at this point. It means that we will still work with the city. If you deem that there's work that has to be done, you know, we will be willing to work with you, but you're just doing the administrative aspect of that. And I think you could decide how you wanted to appropriate the dollars for the improvement, whether it's something through an assessment that the city might decide to do itself, or from way they already collect funds for the normal sewer and drainage that exist. That's strictly up to the city from where I'm coming from. I just think that this has been a topic that we have had on the books for many, many years, and is just now a time that we are looking to give the city that has the control of these districts more administrative control. That's just, you know, the position that I'm taking at this point. I entertain any motion or comments from any of the other board members, and then I would probably conclude that if there is still dispute regarding this, to me this will be something that the attorneys will have to, from the city and the county, will have to address.
Okay? I ask for a clarification.
Yes.
You mentioned administrative rights as being what is being transferred. So in the file that I was given a copy of, it looks like Darren Moon has had county crews go out and fix in spots where there are settlements. So that's not administrative. So would that continue?
Good question. Darren, I think let me ask you.
Darren can come and address this, but Darren would go fix those and then charge it back to the drainage district. So it was a question of, were we going to farm it out to some, you know, some third party to go handle it, or was Darren going to do it? It was no cost to the county engineer, and it was, as I understand it, an administrative decision that was the right way to handle those particular instances. Darren, I'd have you address it if you'd like, but I would like, I'd like to make sure we're clear on the other point that you made earlier, that there were similar circumstances in other districts and we made a different decision. Where we are right now is we've got five that we're planning on moving ahead with turning over. We've got two that we did not pull off the table. We just asked to study some more. I assume those two in Huxley are the ones you're referring to. Nothing has been taken away. Our problem in Huxley was we don't have records of, and Scott Wall, I'd ask you to address this, we don't have records of if the one drainage or the drainage addition even exists in Huxley, so we didn't have enough information to move ahead, which I see as an entirely different situation than this one, where we know that 100% of the improvements lie within the city of Ames. The whole purpose of this mechanism is with the belief that local control is best handled in as local of capacity as possible, and to me, that's clearly, in this case, the city of Ames. So, Darren and Scott, I'd ask you guys to...
you can use one of the mics up here. You have to stay there in case you have other questions. You can use this one. Just hit the light there, and you don't want. Here you go. There you go.
I guess my comment with this district in particular would be part of the reason this got started is because there was an issue with the tile, and I was contacted by the Public Works Director of City of Ames. Pretty much said, I want this fixed immediately so our city resident with the tile issue could fill over the top of the tile. So I was like, wait a minute. I'm uncomfortable with filling over the tile, but that's where we got in the middle. It's a city resident. Why should the county be even involved in this situation? And so as far as maintaining that tile in the future, I would say I don't know that we would be the ones to go maintain it and do repairs. The city should probably take that over so they can make that call themselves.
And the area you're speaking about is on the west side of South Duff as you leave.
Correct.
Kind of north of the greenhouse in there.
But accurate or inaccurate that the city, if the city had control of this district and there was an issue, they could decide to use city crews and bill it back to the district. They could decide to hire a third party to go fix it and bill it back to the district. Or they could fix it and not bill it back to the district. I mean, those are kind of the options.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question that there's a district tile there and it's established and it's all within the city limits of Ames. We just think the jurisdiction is better fit for the city to take care of that.
Well, and if you're getting calls from the Ames Public Works Director telling you to fix a problem with a tile, that tells me that tile is at least in some form, way or form operational, or they wouldn't notice there was a problem.
Right.
Yeah. Anything to add, Scott?
Okay. Huxley,
excuse me.
The ones that we are still studying.
Yeah, the issue in Huxley is that all our districts, we have maps of the districts, we have written records. The map of the district in Huxley, which is, there are two districts, there's a district and there's an extension to that district. The map of the district extension does not show any tile. However, the written records do indicate that there was tile placed in. We have bills for that tile. There's a written description of where that tile was to be placed, in fact, where it was placed. So there's just a discrepancy that somehow didn't make it onto the maps of the district. So in that case, that's something where we need to figure out if that tile actually went there based on the fact that somebody paid for the tile to be put in. We're assuming it's there. We just don't have it on the maps. That was the issue. And actually, that's why that's been put off for more investigation.
Would the balance of funding for the drainage district get transferred as well? Since that has been an assessment, I assume, how you have money? It's over $800.
It would stay in the drainage district fund for that drainage district. If a district is abolished, let's say Ames took this over and decided there's no need for this drainage district, let's abolish it, what would happen to the remaining funds in there, Scott? You're getting your exercise this morning.
Yeah, if a district is dissolved, then the funds are distributed back to the people in the district in the percentage of their benefit to drainage.
Okay. Thank you. Other comments?
I would move approval of Resolution 1283, transferring the Drainage District, Washington 59, to the City of Ames.
Second.
It's been moved and second that we move forward with the transfer of Drainage District according to Resolution 1283 of Washington number 59. Is there further comments or discussion? Okay. Just to note, I think this is, again, and I duly do respect the city's attorney's opinion. And I believe that the action that we take at this point, if we approve this, would be moving forward with the transfer of control. And after consultation or discussions from our legal counsel as well as communication with the city, and we determine that this needs to be revisited and amended at some point, I believe we have the authority to do so at that time.
Sure. And Wayne, I would just add, I had a really nice meeting with City Manager Shanker on several issues, but this issue was discussed, And I completely get his point of view, and I assume all of Ames' point of view, that no governmental entity willingly gives something to another governmental entity unless there's some kind of hook attached. There's something more to it. And so I get the skepticism of, oh, this is going to cost us a lot in time and money and headaches and everything else, when the reality is, at least from my perspective, this is simply about local control as solidified as possible. This is all within the city of Ames in terms of improvements. 67% inside the city of Ames, total district. I mean, you've got some farm ground that drains into the district and then across. It goes right through a neighborhood. This just makes sense to me that as Ames deals with water issues in Ames, they should have total control of everything that's going on in that area, and we shouldn't. So I'm not without appreciation of the city of Ames and their reluctance to do this, but it doesn't move me that that's the right thing to do.
Okay, thank you for your comments. So with that, we do have a motion and a second to move forward with the transfer of Washington 59 according to Resolution 1283. Resolution, I'm going to call for roll call. So, Mr. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1283 is adopted. Okay. And thank you, folks, for your attention and your comments. Okay. Item 5, consideration of Resolution 1284, transfer control of Drainage District Union 38 to the City of Cambridge. Again, Scott Wall, anything on this one?
It's the same issues. I don't need to repeat everything I said before. Cambridge has already voluntarily taken over one drainage district within their limits. That one drained more of a residential area. This one drains a agricultural area, but it is predominantly within the city of Cambridge.
Okay. Percentage?
82% of the area of the district. And I don't know the percentage of the tile, but the bulk of the tile, probably at least two-thirds of the tile.
Right. Okay.
Any comments from Cambridge?
No.
Okay.
I move approval of Resolution 1284.
Second.
And moved and second the approval of Resolution 1284. Any additional comments? Hearing none, Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1284 is adopted. Okay.
Second, please.
Okay. Okay, item 6 is the consideration of Resolution 1285, which is the transfer control of Drainage District Roland 50 to the City of Roland. Again, Scott, very similar, but...
Yeah, very similar. In this case, the district is 100% within the City of Roland. Roland was at the meeting. It was the March 20th meeting where we presented this to the various cities. They didn't dispute what we were doing. They agreed that the district was in fact within the city and that they are using it, or at least those residents that are served by it are using it. I believe it's their intention to treat it as a storm sewer and just maintain it as part of their storm sewer system rather than build a district for work that they do there.
So effectively this district will cease to exist.
Yeah. It won't formally cease to exist, but there won't be any work done there as a district.
Move approval of Resolution 1285.
Second.
Been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1285. Any further comments? Hearing none, Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1285 is adopted. Okay, moving on to item 7, discussion and consideration of adding two medical examiner investigations to the county liability insurance. Thank you, Scott, for your efforts. Okay. Paul, Mr. Toot, I think if you can maybe update us again, this is something that you've been working closely with. Okay.
In order to maintain our medical examiner and his help him with his duties here in the county as his practice as a pathologist grows at Through McFarland Clinic, he requested here about a year ago that we consider approving and appointing medical examiner investigators. We did that about 3 weeks ago. We appointed two individuals. A couple of weeks ago, we approved their contract as an independent contractor, so they won't be a county employee. They'll simply be paid a fee for service. One question that did come up was professional liability coverage. I've had a conversation with Brian Anderson through NAP Tedesco about that coverage, and he also spoke with ICAP. ICAP agreed to add any individuals that we appoint as medical examiner investigators to the county's liability policy. In order for an individual to go out and buy that kind of coverage, it would cost thousands of dollars a year. And it would basically do in the investigator program. If we approve this today, it'll cost the county $103 a year for the two investigators total to add them to our liability insurance policy. That way they're covered if through any liability claims that may arise in their duties as an investigator through the medical examiner's office.
Point of question. So assuming that the number of medical examiners in future years could be expanded, would it be just a simple addition of adding those individuals depending on the action we take, and then that cost would somewhat be determined based on the number?
That's my understanding. If this is approved today, we'll supply NAP Tedesco with the names of the two individuals that we've appointed as investigators. If at some point down the road we appoint another individual or one of these two individuals decides not to do it and we have to replace them, we just need to supply them with a name. But I would assume that if we go for more than the two that we've got now, then the cost would be proportionate.
What is the term of the agreement? Is it a yearly agreement, 3 years? I notice you just have the effective date. I'm just
The investigators are appointed similar to the appointment of the medical examiner. Their term will expire when the medical examiner's term expires the end of this year,
December of 2012.
If they choose to be reappointed, we'll make that connection with them as we do with the medical examiner. Then they will be reappointed at our first meeting in January in 2013, and we'll simply have to make the notification to NAP Tedesco and let them know that they've been reappointed.
Okay. Other questions?
Did you run into any concerns when you were looking at this? I mean, does it mess with any kind of precedence that we have on who we cover through the county? Or did you run into any of that, or were there no concerns that you?
I don't think I've got any concerns. We don't typically insure private contractors, but this is a little bit different circumstance. If we didn't provide this coverage for them, they wouldn't be able to provide it themselves. I mean, you know, if they get called out 5 or 6 or 10 times a year, that would be, you know, if they're paying their, we've agreed to pay them $100 per investigation. So if they make $1,000 a year through this, I don't believe that would come close to paying what the premium would be on that type of insurance.
Does this equate at all to the Sheriff's Reserve, and what do we do with them? Do you know off the top of your head?
I think they're covered under, they're actually compensated.
Okay.
No, it's not a compensation, is it?
A dollar a year.
But they're that's a lot.
The reserves are a little bit of a different situation. They are covered under both our liability and our work comp. We have a separate rider on our work comp to cover them for medical expenses. They aren't contract employees, no. It's a different situation. And no, typically we don't cover contract employees, but in this situation, that is what other counties are doing, mainly just to make sure the county's covered. If this person is out there acting in the capacity of the county, the county's responsible for what they do.
Well,
so this will cover us
when they're out. Yeah.
Correct.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Okay. So.
Yeah, I'll move. I'll move adding the two medical examiners to our county's liability insurance.
It's been moved and seconded to add the two medical examiners to the county liability insurance coverage, effective 4/24/12. Any further comments? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Paul, for your work in this area as well. Items 8, I believe, is the presentation of the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority. Planning Development, Leanne Harder. And welcome. I think we have a watershed authority, huh?
Ellie, is it on?
Yeah, it should be on, I think.
To pull it closer.
Just closer to you.
My comments are going to be brief, other than to introduce Mark. Mark Land is with Snyder & Associates out of Ankeny. You'll recall a couple weeks ago you did approve a contract for Snyder & Associates to be the contractor on the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority. Mark's going to spend a little bit of your time just briefing you where we are and the next steps, and then I'll be his Vanna handing out things.
Well, I appreciate that. First of all, thank you for this chance to fill you in very briefly on our work to date, and maybe it's wise to start with is just as a bit of a recap how we got to this point. Is that it's really driven by the flooding of 2008. The state of Iowa has created a community development block grant fund to create watershed management authorities, and I'm handing out just a copy for your reference of that Iowa code section that actually allows for the development of these. Because of the flooding, they thought it would be a good time to get authorities going, which in generally are cities, counties, and soil and water conservation districts within a watershed. They have to be contained in the watershed. And I've handed out a copy of the Squaw Creek Watershed Map also for your reference to see those counties and communities. And what the idea is that there's kind of a list of things in there that they've included what they would do, such as kind of do an analysis of the watershed. And really it's just an authority is maybe a little misnomer, because the way that it's worded, the group maybe doesn't really have any authority, but it's the authority on the watershed, so to speak. So, and I've also handed out a copy of kind of a draft 28E, because what the CDBG funding is really supposed to do is allow the Story County as the kind of liaison with the Iowa Economic Development Authority to kind of gather everybody in the watershed together, develop a 28E agreement, which outlines the parameters of the authority. So in a nutshell, by what your agreement said with the IEDA was by the middle of May, you would have this 28E agreements in place with at least two other jurisdictions in your watershed, and this thus would start the watershed authority. Keeping in mind that obviously the as many as we can get would be preferable, and that process is going. And so what we've been doing, we're actually starting this week meeting with Boone County tomorrow, Story County today, and then we have a meeting of all the other representatives Thursday morning to kind of run through this draft 28E. And I won't go into all the details of the 28E at this point, other than to say it is a draft. The jurisdictions in there, whether it's Story County, Ames, you know, Gilbert, all the other counties, that's to be determined. So at this point, that's the purpose of the meeting on Thursday. Let's see who's interested. Kind of maybe tweak the 28E as appropriate so that we can, you know, get as many as possible on there, and then proceed with the authority from that point.
As I look at your map, and you mentioned Boone, for example, but as I look at the red line, which is the boundary for the watershed itself, why would Boone be a factor in reaching out to just based on, you know, where this lies?
Actually, the within the red line, we have Boone County, and so we're meeting with the county, actually, because the county, Story County,
hey, gotcha.
Hamilton County, and
gotcha.
Webster County are
okay.
Contained within that.
Gotcha. Okay.
So Mark, can you talk just a little bit about the relationship Prairie Rivers has with this watershed and ultimately with you guys?
Absolutely. At the prior to this process of the selection that Leanne talked about with the selection process, the Prairie Rivers had kind of proceeded with assisting Story County with getting this funding, and it actually commenced some initial meetings and discussions with these groups that I'm talking about. Subsequently, after the selection, that we were notified Snyder & Associates was selected, what we did is we went to Prairie Rivers and actually have worked out a sub-consultant agreement with them to basically split the cost so the total funding doesn't change. What we're doing is just a portion of that amount we're kind of splitting with Prairie Rivers, which we felt was prudent because of the knowledge and, you know, past experience that they have in this watershed. And so all these meetings that I'm talking about, Prairie Rivers will be involved with kind of every step of that process, with the idea of, like I said, hopefully we can get, you know, a good number of these jurisdictions to sign on and proceed forward with the authority.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, for anybody listening, can we just describe what the Squaw Creek watershed looks like? I know it begins where Squaw Creek hits the Skunk River, but can you just talk me through to the northwest as it goes?
Sure. It's kind of the stream runs northwest, and it actually, if you went up almost to Webster County, Stratford and Stanhope are at the upper ends of the watershed. So it's about 224 square miles. And so it's actually a fairly substantial watershed. And keeping in mind that, the initial reasoning for the funding was because that size of a watershed, as we all know, can, from some of the past events that have occurred, can generate some good amounts of water that has some flooding impacts. And so that was kind of the initial thought on this and kind of what drove the funding. But we don't want to preclude that there's water quality issues that this group would also factor in and consider in their deliberations as a group. So it really covers both of those items.
Okay, my question relates to the process now. As I look at the 2080 agreement and the language that is there, it would involve at least two or more of the entities, which would be municipalities such as the City of Ames or Gilbert, etc. Have you initiated any conversation at all yet with Ames regarding the watershed management, or will that follow the action that the county would take? Because obviously we have to have an agreement in place, and I know that this is an area since the floods that Ames has had a really a key interest in how to mitigate future damage in years to come, particularly as it relates to what happens north of them as the water flows.
Actually, we did have a opportunity last week to just kind of have an initial discussion with Bob Kindred with the city. And kind of made a personal invitation to Ames to attend the meeting this Thursday. That meeting is kind of in a kind of a group format where everybody is invited to run through both the kind of the elements of the 2080, provide an opportunity for them to kind of feedback, and then what we'll do is we'll kind of lay out a schedule for, based on those who are interested, to be able to attend their, you know, official governing body meeting similar to this to, you know, answer questions in the same way. I think there's another agenda item today that possibly extending the schedule a month to give us a little more time, and Land can chat a little bit about that. But kind of within, I mean, it's a fairly tight time frame here to be able to get those jurisdictions on board. But the idea is let's have a meeting with them initially, and then we will go to them, you know, kind of one by one to answer specific questions, with the idea that we can end up with one final draft that everybody can agree on, and then we can kind of make the rounds and go to their governing body meetings and hopefully sign up as many as we can to start this process.
Okay, so if I'm as I look at the agenda right now, this is more a presentation of where we are, and then I would assume later on the county would be hopefully empowering you to continue to work with Leanne and the other entities as we finalize the agreement as far as the future of flooding in this particular area. Is that correct?
And as we because we knew this meeting was coming up, we thought it was prudent to, you know, have an official meeting with Story County first, since you're the lead agency on this, and then we'll, like I said, we'll kind of run through all the other official meetings with the other governing bodies to kind of outline an official kind of a recommended version that could be approved on this agenda, on a future agenda.
The contract that is in place between Story County and IEDA, as well as the DNR as a third party, does lead one to believe that Story County should continue in the leadership role even beyond the formation of the 28E agreement. There's a placeholder, so to speak, that phase two would be then entered into contract again between Story County and the IEDA and Iowa DNR. Phase two is when the authority and Story County were to apply for the additional planning work to undertake. And then there's a phase three that would actually be the funding to create some mitigation measures, hardcore on the ground improvements. So they're definitely, as Mark goes out and meets with the individuals, and I'm trying to attend as many as I can, I think the question that needs to be asked of everyone is, are you comfortable with Story County being a leader in this? And for you three, are you comfortable with the planning and development staff maintaining the role that we've established, as you said, Wayne, beyond just this initial phase once the 28 is approved and up and going? That's probably a larger question than you'll answer today, but something I do ask you to keep in the back of your minds.
Yeah, and if I would address my perspective on this, Leanne, and that is, as we work through putting together a 28E or not, but as we work through the attempt of putting together a 28E, I firmly believe that it is Story County's role to be an instigator of trying to get this done, and I do view this as being appropriate use of your staff time to get done. That said, now here's the reverse argument of the local control that we just had with the drainage district. This encompasses, well, outside of Ames and Gilbert, there's not a whole lot of Story County in this watershed. And so I look at it and I say, if I'm really going to look hard at how Ames feels about this and their involvement in this, because for Story County to try to take a leadership role if Ames is not on board, to me seems misplaced in this case. When you look at where the bottom of this watershed is, it's just outside Ames, but basically flows all the way through Ames. And so for me, I would be completely comfortable, Leanne, with Story County having a leadership role and seeing if we can put this together and ultimately what it looks like. But then I'm really going to feel like Story County needs to defer to others as we move into the future. And we take whatever role we have, but I don't know that we can be a leader if there isn't buy-in from other groups.
Well, I think you're right, and I appreciate your analysis of that. That alone was part of the earlier discussion. I remember a few years ago I sat in on the earlier discussion when we gathered together people to really start addressing the flooding issue and what the future may be. And at that time, it was primarily Ames, but the county went on record saying that we wanted to be a player. We wanted to be part of ongoing discussion, because what happens in Ames also affects what happens outside of Ames, particularly areas south of us and so forth. And again, I think your analysis is right on target. If they want to defer that role, that obviously will come up during the deliberation and discussion. I think what Leanne is basically saying is that her staff would be willing to initially start that phase if we so direct that, but it would probably be up to the entities to finally determine how that will be administered, I would assume. Is that your understanding, Leanne?
I think once the Watershed Management Authority is up and running and solidified, has bylaws, has a board of directors, we just become a participant in that board of directors. If Story County does agree with the 20E agreement, it becomes a signatory to that agreement.
I think part of the reason that Story County's got the role it does today is because, again, it was a tight timeline last fall, and we needed to identify somebody, a municipality or a county government that was going to step up and actually make the application for the grant. And by the time we became aware of it, I think we were drawing really close to the deadline last October or November when we had to get this, make the submission. And I think that was kind of the intent all along, that you know, let's get the other political subdivisions involved. And the first initial two meetings that I've attended, they did have pretty good buy-in from. I know they had Boone County had a representative there, and Stratford and Stanhope both had representatives, and the city of Ames was represented. And
so. Well, now the Prairie Rivers already encompasses these four counties, right? So, I mean, so we've already got at least some buy-in to the need for this. It just seems to me, as I look at this watershed, there are four key players in terms of government. I'm not including soil and water districts right now, but four key players that I believe, if this is really going to go, you got to have. And that would be Ames, Story County, Boone County, and Hamilton County. It'd be great to get Webster. It'd be great to get Gilbert and Stanhope and Stratford. It'd be great to get all those. But as I look at this, if you really want to pull the whole watershed together and try to make a difference, those are the four you better have on board. And I'm completely comfortable with us doing what we can to see if we can pull that group together. But then I'm going to be concerned about what our role is after that.
And that's why I just want to take a second to thank Mark and Snyder and Associates for reaching out to Prairie Rivers. They've done work in this watershed on their own. The current chair of the board of directors for Prairie Rivers is a member of the Squaw Creek Coalition and has walked this creek numerous times. And there's been a lot of work that's done and has been done in this watershed initially. So I just want to thank you guys for reaching out to Prairie Rivers and allowing them to be a player in this.
Great. Well, thank you, Mark, for your presentation and for being here. We will wait to hear further what the next step is. And so, Board, with your permission, I will move on to item 9, which is the consideration of requesting a 45-day extension for the performance period of Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority.
Kind of the next step.
I'd like to be optimistic that we can accomplish this by May 14th, but the reality is juggling the different meetings with different jurisdictions, that 45-day grace period would give me and as well as Mark, I think, some assurance that flexibility is built in. So I'm asking that you allow staff, mainly me, draft a letter to the IEDA to attention Mr. Joe Bulkey, and he's our project manager, that we do officially request the 45-day extension to June 30th. And once I draft that, allow for the approval of the chair to sign that and then send it down, hopefully today or tomorrow.
And I'll move approval of the request for the 45-day extension for the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Grant.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved in second to approve the 45-day extension, and with that is to allow the chair to sign the letter requesting the extension. Okay. Hearing no further comment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I'll take a minute.
All righty. Thank you. All righty. Good deal. Okay. Okay. Move that. Beautiful map. And thank you. And I have the what?
Oh.
All I have on this is agency report next. Okay. Darren, if you would mind, excuse me, Nancy, if you don't, can I just take him away from me for a second? Okay. Based on your analysis, is there anything to report based on the action we took earlier?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's one small error. There was an error that I can only assume is in the unit price on one of these items. It's a difference of $8. It's not a big item. I think what I'm going to go ahead and do is assume they're total amounts on the right are correct and the total dollar amount's correct, and we'll move forward with that, and we'll have to adjust the unit price, and the contract will still come through the board, and so the board will have to approve that adjusted unit price, but there's no competition issues here, so I don't see any reason why we can't move forward.
Okay. All right. So with that, based on the early action, we will plan to
receive the contract and move forward as such. So appreciate your work in this regard. Thank you. Okay. Okay. And now we're ready to move on to agency reports and YSS, George and his entourage.
Like dessert after a long meal, George, you coming up to the microphone.
I say so. Good morning, George Belitzos, Executive Director, Youth and Shelter Services, here to give our quarterly report, progress report, on the services that the county generously funds for youth and shelter services and through juvenile court and also through asset process. I'm going to begin by just giving a quick update on several things that have occurred in the last quarter, January, February, March. 3 weeks ago, we went through our every three-year national CARF accreditation. We will know whether we have 1, 2, or 3 year accreditation in about 30 days. We also have a report to give to you on a struggle that we're having at Rosedale Shelter. As you well know, last year the legislature cut shelter funding, Child Welfare Emergency Services is what it's called in the state budget, by $1 million. There's only $4 million, so it's a 25% cut. Three of the four shelters that closed are in central Iowa. Newton, Indianola, and the Polk County shelter all closed. There are only two central Iowa shelters left, us in Ames and YESS in Des Moines. We have been, since the 1st of July, very busy and struggling because we're getting a lot of referrals from those other counties. What we have done, along with most of the other shelters, is put a lot of emphasis on diverting kids in crisis from shelter and getting them back home. We are doing a lot more crisis intervention. As you know, we have a 24-hour call-in service. And we really just started, we've always done crisis intervention, but not with the notion of diverting kids from shelter back into their home without even having a day in shelter. But that's what we're doing because we're full. So far this year, Story County kids that we have done a crisis intervention and usually a mediation to get them back home, 68. Kids diverted from shelter, 46 placed in shelter. So, and those are all Story County youth. We are really struggling also financially because this costs a lot more than what the state is paying. We are lowering our costs. We're getting all the leftover free food from all of the restaurants on campus, delivered by our local Kiwanis Club, or clubs, and our daily cost of food has gone from about $5.45 per kid down to $1.50.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's been a great win-win. Using leftover food, the kids love the food. We're doing a lot more collecting of supplies that we need. We just had Shelter Awareness Day last week. Last year, you might recall that the three of you were at Shelter Awareness Day and received recognition for your many years of funding for the shelter. And this year, we had this fundraiser, and we had volunteers at three of our grocery stores in Ames, and had a list of things that we could use, and people would go in the store and come back out and donate. We had over 600 rolls of toilet paper, hundreds of boxes of Kleenex, tampons, pens, pencils, all kinds of items that the kids need at the shelter. It was a great response, I have a photo on this clipboard I'm going to hand around to you so you can see the volunteers at work and at the different stores, and there's a list of items that were donated. The day of shelter awareness, we dedicated the Philo Berry Memorial Garden. Philo Berry was a great citizen of Ames, a great supporter of YSS for 34 years. He served as a volunteer, and upon his death last August, his family designated memorial gifts for YSS. $10,000 plus was donated, and we created a memorial park. I also have a clipboard, because I know that the three of you weren't able to attend. We have a beautiful fountain there. There are two benches where the families can meet with their children, or kids can go out and just sit and listen to the water. It's a brook with a fountain at the end, and it recirculates. It's really neat looking. The O'Berries picked out all the rocks. They came actually from here in Nevada. They were all donated. It's really pretty. I want you to see it.
Where is it located, George?
You were there. Okay. Thank you. Wasn't it?
Where is it located, actually, again? I'm trying to remember.
It's at Rosedale Shelter.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's at the shelter.
Right out, I think at that time, I don't know if when we were there for the awards presentation.
No, it didn't exist.
It didn't exist.
No,
okay.
This just was dedicated last Thursday.
Wow.
So it's really neat. It's really neat. So all the photos are there. We had a good turnout. Two of the Berry children spoke. Two of the youth in the shelter spoke. And then Terry O'Berry, Phil's wife, dedicated the fountain. The other item I wanted to... I'm giving Terry Johansson's report since she wasn't able to be here. I also need to give really quick Jason Hoglund's report on the treatment program, and I think the thing that you're most interested in is how the transition is going with the Richmond Center and CFR handing over a lot of the work with the clients who have been served by Richmond Center up to now. And as you know, 15% of the Richmond Center clients are juveniles and children. And so they have identified 150 cases that will be transferred to YSS that are children and youth. All 150 are kids on medication. Of the 150, only 50 are actually in therapy or counseling. So actually, Jason is at a meeting right now with Ierly Ball in Des Moines and CFR, going over the cases, and we're quickly moving to July 1 implementation. It's a lot of work, a lot to get ready for, and we're doing the very best we can. I think the board made a very good decision bringing Ierly Ball in. They have a great reputation. They know what they're doing. We're going to be a subcontractor, as you know. They have found a location, and I don't think they've signed a contract, so I'll let them announce that to you, but it is right on a main road and easily accessible by bus. So they're working really hard. If you look at the report that was handed out to you earlier, our quarterly report, you will see our client counseling program is really busy. All of last year, individual counseling, the number of cases has already increased over last year, and we're only 9 months through the year. You see the aftercare program. We served 58 last year, already 54 this year. The chemical dependency outpatient program, 88 all of last year, that's 12 months, 88 for 12 months, 98 in 9 months. So we're already ahead of last year. And the telehealth, that's the psychiatric medical medication program. We served 60 last year and already 52 this year, and those are Story County. All of these are Story County figures. That will go way up in July when we get those transfer of cases. I'm going to now invite Jerry Bug and her staff to join her, and she will give the report on mentoring and also the after-school programs and all of our youth development programs, and then I'll wind it up at the end.
Okay. Thank you. Jerry, we were able to get the grant that usually comes through. All the documentation was submitted on time. Great.
Yes. Thank you.
That's always one. That's one that every year.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And thank you very much for Shelley for her help.
I want to first of all to introduce Barb Biersner, our new mentoring coordinator, and have her tell you a little bit about herself and update you on the mentoring program.
Hi, again, my name is Barb Biersner. I've been with Youth and Shelter Services. This is my 12th year. I've been the coordinator of the Boone County program since the beginning of mentoring for YSS. Recently, Karen Cruz left her position with the Story County program, so I am now the Boone and Story County mentoring coordinator. Thank you. The mentoring program in Story County, the report was, you do have the report on our current match numbers. Currently in Story County, we have 210 active mentoring matches. Some things that have happened this quarter, obviously I started the position as mentoring coordinator. The state of Iowa recognized outstanding volunteers in mentoring, and Marathea Pitt of Nevada received the Excellence in Mentoring Award. That is a very special award. It's only given to very few people in the state of Iowa, so it's a big honor to receive that award. She received that in January. For National Mentoring Month, we had pizza movie nights within our school districts in Story County. Very successful, very popular. A lot of kids and a lot of mentors like to attend that for a special event. Mentors and mentees also made cards and mailed those cards to children at Blank Children's Hospital in Des Moines. Our bingo night was actually, the planning took place in the third quarter, but the bingo night was actually April 12th. And it was very, very successful. All matches from Boone and Story County are able to attend that event. It's our end-of-the-year celebration event, and we had 100-plus people that came to that. It's held at the Ames Middle School every year, and prizes are given out to all. All the kids get prizes. The Linus Project donates blankets for this, and we found in the last few years that the blankets are the most wanted prize. All the kids just love coming away. They get to pick out a homemade blanket, one of the fleece blankets, and they go after those blankets. So we appreciate the Linus Project for donating those every year. Any questions?
No.
Thank you. Okay.
Welcome to your new position in Story County.
Well, thank you. The Kids Club program's going strong last week, this week, and next week are open houses. Right now we're serving 170 kids in the three sites in Ballard, Story City, and Gilbert school districts, and making plans for the summer, and I have a summer brochure I forgot on the chair back there. I'll share with you. Their theme this summer is... I've forgotten our theme. A rainforest, I'm sorry. And really going to have a science emphasis, and they're very excited about that. Got some grant money to get some national training through a webinar on implementing that, just geared towards them, which was kind of fun. They, one of the things I think I'm
proudest of Kids Club and our Teen Club program is their emphasis on service learning and giving back to the community. And in the Kids Club programs, two of them are working hard with the local libraries. Gilbert just started a new library, and the kids are doing the artwork that will go in the library there. And then in Ballard, they're doing plantings outside the library in Ballard. And in Roland Story, they're working with parks and putting in some trees. So they plan all year for this project. Kids are very involved in determining what that project is and implementing it by the end of the year. So that's real exciting. The Teen Club program, again, is in the Ballard schools, and the Collins Maxwell School runs 4 days, Monday through Thursday, and serves about 30 kids per school. And again, they are working hard on their service learning projects. Our prevention programs have been working hard and served about 2,600 kids this year thus far with all of their curriculums, working with the community. We're getting ready for the end of May for the first ever National Prevention Week. We got a very small grant to do something very creative, and after Teen Maze and Risky Business, our brains aren't feeling real creative, but we're working on it. So I'm sure if we do some events, you'll know about it. We may come back for a proclamation or about that. Our youth employment, I don't see a report here for youth employment, but they are working hard on the Be the Change camps this summer for middle school students at no cost. We'll do 3 camps this summer for that. On other activities that are right around the corner, Saturday are 2 drug drop-offs. In collaboration with local partners. I'm sure Barb will talk a little bit more about that. So that's in Nevada and Ames this Saturday morning. We just completed our second Amazing Teen Maze. Great event. I would encourage you next year to just drop by and see it in action. It's an amazing event. We served 7th graders and collaboration with the Division 11 Kiwanis and Green Story in Boone County. With the exception of 2 school districts in Story County, all the school districts participate, and we served about 927th graders in 4.5 days. Yeah.
Say you're having trouble being creative.
Right. Well, we were real creative up there. Yeah, right. We kind of got burned out. 4.5 days on concrete floor gets to you. But it was a great event. We're just assembling the evaluations from the teens and volunteers and schools, and just an overwhelmingly positive. I think of all those 920 evals, one youth said it was a waste of their time. The other comments were just very positive, and other than wanting more chairs to sit on and a little water during the maze, they were thrilled with it. And of course, next week is Risky Business. This year we've got a technology theme to it, the social revolution in youth development. We have a new youth keynoter. Our youth keynoter backed out last week. And we have an Alex Curris from Canada, and he will be talking on digital citizenry. So that should be very good. So we are excited about that. And, of course, the breakfast is from 8 to 9 in the morning. So if you can come prior to your board meeting.
At the same place, the Sheman. Yeah.
Yep, it's in Sheman, and the breakfast is up in the Brunier. Mm-hmm. So. Any questions?
No.
Okay.
No. It should be an exciting time again. This is always a highlight, and I think you all do a fantastic job with the whole conference. So,
yeah, it's
Risky
great
Business. You bet. Good. Hey, Bob. Hey, Don.
Morning.
Thank you.
Great.
My name is Barb Mittman. I'm a certified prevention specialist with Youth and Shelter Services, and I coordinate the YSS of Eastern Story County office.
A little closer.
Our service area includes residents of Collins, Colo, Maxwell, McCallsburg, Nevada, Zeering, and the rural areas surrounding those cities. information about the school-based programs and services offered in collaboration with Eastern Story County School Districts is provided in the gray color packet that was distributed this morning. Please note the number of mentoring matches, students served, and the classrooms facilitated during this quarter. Other community youth and family development and treatment services branches, programs and services, including counseling and treatment, youth employment, and the countywide FADS program, also served young people and families in the third quarter, and that information can be found in each of their respective reports. As the Eastern Story County Center coordinator, I continue to collaborate with local schools, attending case management and student assistance team meetings on a regular basis. School leadership, students, and families from each of the three Eastern Story County school systems have benefited from my work as a conduit of comprehensive prevention services and expertise during this quarter. Specifically, I've supported student handbook revisions and provided a link to a specialized drug enforcement resource at Collins Maxwell, a new project, Engaged Parents Program at Colonesco, and partnered with Nevada Schools to sponsor a Spanish-speaking parent support meeting that will be held April 30th, this next Monday, and to also partner with Nevada School Resource Officers and school authorities to address a crisis situation with a Nevada middle school family outside the school day and outside regular business hours. Folks look to us for leadership and that role of capacity building and providing technical assistance is really a significant part of what I do. I do just want to express my appreciation for your ongoing support of my role as a conduit for the Eastern Story County communities. I'd like to focus on the Collins Maxwell Impact after school program at Collins Maxwell. This is, as Jerry mentioned, a free after school program for middle school students in 6th through 8th grade, and it's my pleasure today to bring you kind of a summary report of their service learning and some incredible successes and partnerships that they've experienced as they're wrapping up their school year. Chelsea Hammes is our newly hired Impact After School Program Facilitator. She was hired in October and kicked off this year's program on October 31st with a Halloween party. The Iowa State women's rugby team began to partner with the Collins Maxwell Impact members as early as November. They visited regularly, provided some leadership for active team-building games, and helped the students start to understand what service learning was about and the teamwork required. Impact Youth spent the first part of December working on a mini-grant proposal to complete a semester of service. This grant had to be written by the young people. They chose to implement some safety in Maxwell, in the Maxwell community, and were awarded the $500 mini-grant. So since then, they've been implementing the grant. In January, Impact started the investigation phase of their semester of service on MLK Day by distributing surveys about safety in Maxwell to middle school students. Members also walked around the community and handed out letters to different businesses and organizations describing their goals and inviting community members to get involved. After running into a few roadblocks, the Impact members restarted the planning phase of their project. The projects selected reflected both a set of parameters and the actual interests of the students involved. Students chose to complete three projects: a park cleanup, fixing up the disc golf course, including new tee signs in Maxwell, and hosting an afternoon of activities to talk about safety and to promote the Maxwell Youth Activity Center. The park cleanup was held on March 27th. The ISU rugby team assisted with the disc golf project, including making sure we know how many strokes it's supposed to get, or disc golf, are there strokes? Yes. And to help create the new tee sign so that they're accurate and competitive. And the afternoon of activities is this afternoon in Maxwell. So I invite you to surrender to the sunshine and drop in on that group at the park this afternoon and really see what's going on. In addition to the semester of service, Impact also has implemented positive action. It's a prevention curriculum that discusses a different developmental topic each week. After the discussion, they record an episode of PALS, and that stands for Positive Actions Lead to Success. PALS is a radio skit turned television show in which students act out a scene and then callers have an opportunity to call in, ask questions, or voice opinions about the actions that took place. Impact members really enjoy taping and watching the skits, and it's proven to be a great way to connect the concepts that they've been discussing with their daily lives. You Teach Days are also a favorite among the members. You Teach, obviously, gives members to teach, gives them a chance to lead and to teach their peers about everything from cooking homemade macaroni and cheese to dance and even a bit about pet management. The students are motivated to participate and follow their agreed-upon behavior expectations by a ticket system, and the culmination of the ticket system store and the items and privileges is a field trip that's scheduled in May. Student involvement and focus on service learning really did open a door for community involvement in Maxwell this past school year. Impact staff and members want to thank the ISU rugby team, the Volunteer Center of Story County, Deputy Scott, the Champs Group, Maxwell Area Renewal Committee, also known as MARC, and the leadership from the Maxwell Youth Activity Center for partnering with them during the school year. Questions?
Thank you.
Very good. Excellent. Hopefully some of the successes that you have in the communities like Maxwell could be passed on to some of our other smaller communities that are challenged with finding activities to engage their youth. It does require some local people within the area willing to step up and be part of the leadership group, and that's sometimes a very challenging part on your part. But thank you for your outreach in this area as well.
To wrap things up, I want to share with you two awards that YSS is getting this week. I'm very proud of both. The first is tonight at the ISU Memorial Union, the Story County Volunteer Center is giving the Youth Volunteer Award to AMP, Achieving Maximum Potential. Those are all kids in foster care. One of the things that they did, they have a legislative agenda to improve child welfare in Iowa, where the kids go to the legislature. And we had a press conference. First Lady Chris Branstad was there supporting the kids. And they introduced several bills. And they had local legislators. And the case I'm going to give you right now was a legislator from Boone who introduced some legislation. This legislator is also a foster parent and adoptive parent, so he knew the issues. Brittany, a girl from Story City who was adopted by a family in Story City, took the lead on this bill, and it was to improve the human trafficking law in Iowa. Brittany was a runaway at 14 and was picked up by human traffickers, drugged, taken from Iowa to Chicago, where she was held against her will in a hotel where she was involved, or they involved her, in prostitution. Horrible abuse beyond description. She was rescued by the FBI, returned to Iowa, and subsequently adopted by the family in Story City. She is healed, and she's now speaking out. And in Iowa, young people in who are involved in prostitution under similar circumstances, those offenders cannot be charged under the current law with human trafficking. It is human trafficking. They're enslaved. They have no benefits that they get from that money, and they are abused. She spoke at that, and she met with legislators along with the other AMP kids, and that change in the code passed unanimously, both the House and the Senate, and was signed by the governor. It was one of the greatest days for abused and neglected youth in the state that took place. A week after that, eight people were arrested for human trafficking in the Waterloo Cedar or Waterloo area, and one of them was a teenage girl who was enslaved in prostitution, actually. So some good things are coming from that, and those youth are being recognized for their role, and you should be very proud of the Story County youth. The second award is this Thursday night. The Iowa Pride Network, which is the main statewide organization that fights bullying in the schools, is giving YSS its annual partnership in anti-bullying award. And it will be presented in Des Moines at a event, dinner that they're having. Very proud of this. We have, as a child welfare agency, we'll be the first child welfare agency to ever receive the award. And we have done a lot of work in anti-bullying, both in our prevention programs and our treatment programs. We have at YSS, and we're probably the only agency in the state, human service agency, we have a task force it's called the LGBT Best Practice Committee. And they have come up with a lot of very innovative ways to reach out to gay and lesbian youth to try to provide them the services that they need and to support them and to address bullying. One of the things that we have throughout our agency, and our counseling staff have almost all been trained to be safe zones, and they post these in their facilities or in their office to let the youth know this is a safe place to share who you are. It's those secrets that kill those kids. As you know, we just had a death of a 14-year-old in a rural community. There are actually, I just got this email this morning, three vigils going on, Cedar Rapids, Quad Cities, Des Moines, in memory of this 14-year-old boy who had come out as gay in his hometown and in his school and was horribly bullied. Cyberbullying, these are some of the things we're going to be addressing at the Risky Business Conference next week. That's the main theme of Risky Business, is how the impact of the electronic media, digital devices on our young people, and this is one of the negative impacts, is the cyberbullying. You know, you've probably seen the articles in the Des Moines Register, bullied boy couldn't see past his pain. What YSS is really making advances toward is helping the kids deal with the pain that are being bullied or preventing bullying. One of the other things that our committee at YSS has come up with, and this is on, it's a trifold on every counselor's desk, and it's a Who Am I trifold, and it one side is on gender and gender identity, sexual orientation, ethnicity, religion, so that the kids feel more comfortable talking about these things. They have definitions of what is transgender, what is gay, what is lesbian, what is bisexual, what does it mean to be questioning. When CARF saw these, they said, "We've never seen anything like this. This is great." They took it with them. They want to share it with other agencies. So I'm really proud of our work. The other thing I think you already know about, because maybe 2 years ago when we introduced this, we have our no disrespect wristbands that the kids sign the pledges for to not bully anyone. And if they are found bullying or making fun of one another, they have to remove their wristband. We also have staff wearing them, and these, I think we passed them out to you. These are our posters.
For a couple of days, and they were getting
in the way. He had to take it off, right? Also, you may have seen one of our own local legislators is doing introducing an anti-bullying hotline plan. Actually, there is a national anti-bullying hotline specifically for gay and lesbian youth to talk. It's too bad this young man didn't know about it. Talk to somebody 24 hours a day. So we're trying to get this out, and these are at all of our facilities. I'm going to put them in your brochure rack downstairs and also give all of you a copy because not only are trained counselors on the line, but also they have the ability to have these chat rooms that are supervised where kids that are bullied can talk to one another and share their pain. There's no better way to deal with it than to talk to others who are going through the same thing. So this is a great thing. This is what they should be promoting. With that, we'll be getting those two awards. I also wanted to invite you to an event my board is holding for me next week. The next time I come to give a quarterly report, you can call me Dr. George.
Oh, Dr. George. Yes. Oh, my goodness. So between Gorgeous George and Dr. George.
No more Gorgeous George. Now it's going to be Dr. George. I'm not a wrestler.
Okay.
All right. With that, we'll close our report, and thank you very much.
Well,
for
George, there's no question. We are in a unique position here in Story County, and thanks to your leadership and your wonderful staff. You know, as I serve on a couple state juvenile justice advisory commissions, and we're looking at funding that is being reduced on the national level that comes down to the state and then ultimately to the local groups, we're seeing drastic cuts and changes in what communities are able to deliver because they don't have the funds to have people in place to provide this level of service. And I think your vision and the leadership that has been done here in Ames and Story County is just one of the shining examples of how committed people who are trying to make a difference in the lives of young people can have a lasting impact. But it's your ability to reach out to stakeholders in our community to help them recognize that by saving one child during their early formative years pays tremendous dividends. And so later on in life, you know, they're not caught up in the juvenile justice system and having other issues that we all are concerned about. So I really want to compliment you again for this. And I know that we're struggling. Areas like Waterloo, Johnson County, Blackhawk County, as well as Woodbury County are just barely able to maintain some of the good programs that they put in place simply because the funding is no longer there. And we know that there's going to be more crises develop amongst our youth in some of those areas. So I want to continue to be supportive, but certainly to recognize that these types of efforts just don't happen without committed people who are willing to do whatever they can to try to make the difference in the lives of all of our kids. And I think that is certainly the hallmark that you guys have demonstrated, and thank you for your leadership. Okay.
Hey, I would just add clearly you've got a great staff and you've got great volunteers, but I know as a relatively new resident, especially compared to these two of Story County, I am so glad that we're a place where not only you came to Story County, but you chose to stay in Story County, and appreciate everything you do.
Okay. Okay, moving on to departmental reports. None, is that correct? Okay. Anything on liaison and committee updates?
Okay.
Moving on. Other reports? None at this time. Rick?
For a minute.
Okay, we are just moving a little quickly. Okay. Anything else under other reports? Okay. Consideration of claims. This is claim week, and we've had a chance to review those.
I think we need to keep claims at about this level every week,
yes.
Every 2 weeks. If we keep it there, yeah, that would be pretty good.
Absolutely.
I'll move approval of the claims list.
Second.
Been moved and seconded the approval of the claims. Hearing no further comments, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Claims are approved. Okay. Personnel actions, item 12. We have several listed here. Most of these are per union contract, et cetera.
Second.
Been moved and seconded the approval of personnel action. Hearing no further comments, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. How you doing, Shelly? Are you keeping up? Okay. Okay. Now we're able to move to 13. Under the consent agenda, were there all items are here? Did you, the one road closure, did we get that? It is duly noted. Okay. Yeah, 1246 was one of the ones that was added that didn't originally show up as Supervisor Sanders acknowledged at the beginning. Okay?
Move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded the approval of the consent agenda. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Clinton? Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. Okay, all right, and now we move down to public forum. Public forum number two. This is where comments from the audience on an item not on today's agenda. Anyone? Okay, thank you. We'll move on to announcements from the supervisors.
Pass. Three quick items I just want to bring to you guys' attention. We're going to see them on future agendas, and you know how I feel about surprising you guys. Emergency management is going to come and talk to us a little bit about trying to renegotiate our contract with the city of Des Moines for hazmat teams. It basically ended up that we're not getting to change a whole lot. Story County is a co-signator of that along with the commission, so we need to be made aware of it. So Keith will be bringing us that in the next week or two. Sunshine Review, I talked earlier while Darren was here about wanting to get regraded by the group that takes a look at websites to see openness and transparency. I'm going to come forward next week to the three of us and request that we do, in fact, ask them to go ahead and regrade us rather than waiting for their annual time. I just feel like so many people have put so much work into this, I'd like us to go ahead and get recognized for that. And then finally, as we get through the May 1st conversation, when Lisa Markley comes to us and talks about where we are in the budget and what we need to do as far as allocations and everything else, I'm going to want to make sure that we talk about video setup for this room and how it fits in, or if it fits in, what kind of priority we're putting on that. But I just want to keep that in front of us as we get through the conversation. So wanted to throw those three things out there so that when you see them, you know where they came from.
Great. And I will just add that this afternoon at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock actually, I will be meeting with the executive director of Heartland, of HRDA, actually, as we are continuing the transition discussion of taking over the operations of the transportation service that is currently provided by Heartland Senior Services. Now we'll be talking about a future possibility of a storage facility and things of that nature, and we're having ongoing discussions regarding the transfer of the drivers and how all of that's going to be impacted as of July 1st. So our board on Thursday will be entertaining several options. Some of them will probably involve whether or not the board is comfortable with moving forward because there will be some funding requests tied to some of the things that we will be recommending. But I will keep you posted regarding the transition that is currently taking place, and there's still ongoing communication between Heartland Senior Services and the HRDA central office in Des Moines. So with that, and I'm going to try to go to a couple of meetings this evening that was mentioned. One is the Youth Involvement Award and the 6 o'clock meeting about the city airport, just to sit in on part of that at this time.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure one of us got to that, but I don't know that there's a need for more than one of us to be there. So, Wayne, if you're gonna handle that, I'll step back.
Okay, great. All right. Good, and so with that, we are now ready for the last item. It's been moved. Is there a second? It's been moved in a second to adjourn. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Meeting is adjourned. Okay.
Luke, you feel well enough versed in the drainage district stuff?